This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Christine Wong
and Majida Hashim.
If you happen to be listening yesterday, we had a story about the pop sockets.
Yep.
We were saying how we thought perhaps they would be a little bit irritating and how what were they on track to sell? 30 million by the end of this year, 2017?
Yeah, some ridiculous number like that.
So we decided to take upon ourselves, myself and Majida, to purchase
and
one of these.
Arvin
each.
Is in as well, but
Arvin is
he'll
in
join
too.
Us tomorrow.
We bought one each. We thought we'd stick it to our phones. We're going to see how it goes for the next week or so to find out whether they're irritating or not, or whether we need to dispose of them or buy more.
And meanwhile, I will sit back as a control group who doesn't have one.
There we go.
There you are.
Christine is indeed our control group. She will see the levels of stress or not that happen over the next couple of days. Anyway,
science.
Moving swiftly on, our stories for today, of course, it is Thursday, meaning it is Tech Thursday. No Jeff Sandu today, though, but we will be talking about a car that is self-healing, which I'll be starting off with very shortly. There's a how Citigroup have joined the AI bandwagon. There's an app that's in the App Store that is a makeup removing app.
Oh, yeah.
Which we'll get to a little bit later on. Majida will be covering how the US decides which security flaws to keep secret and which ones to tell us about. We'll then be finishing off with an algorithm that can tell you what you've learned before you go to sleep. All very interesting stuff. If you want to get in touch with our show this afternoon, please get us on Twitter or at BFM Radio, or you can get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So the first story that I came across is from Lamborghini. And this is one of those things that when I was a kid, a Lamborghini poster would be hung up in my room as one of those things that I would never, ever have, but I would look at. Mm-hmm. And when I spoke to Jeff this morning, he said, you know, if you were going to draw a car as a young boy, it would probably end up like something like a Lamborghini, right?
Yeah.
All angles and big wheels and very small windows. So the folks over at Lamborghini have turned to an unlikely source in their continued quest to build the world's best supercar. Not content with their current lineup, the Italian car manufacturer has recently teamed up with MIT to develop the first self-healing car, right? I read that and went, well, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, sounds very cool.
Right? So having recently revealed the Terzo Millennio, which is Italian for third millennium, that was revealed at the MTech 2017, Lamborghini claims that this is the first car that can self-heal. Using sensors embedded throughout the vehicle, the Terzo Millennio, I'll do that again, Terzo Millennio.
You've got to have that accent when
I like it, right? It can monitor its own health and determine when and where any damage occurs. It will then release a compound composed of nanotubes that will fill in any crack in an effort to prevent its further spread.
What?
Right? So the car isn't just self-healing either, but it's also a fully electric vehicle. However, instead of using conventional batteries, this car uses a series of supercapacitors. So unlike a traditional battery, a supercapacitor can last for millions of charges and discharge cycles without losing any of its energy storage capability. It also allows a car to charge very rapidly, meaning an owner will be back on the road far faster than someone in a traditional electric vehicle. If you are forking out for a Lamborghini, you would expect these kind of things, right?
Right.
But the idea that they've turned up with MIT to do something like this is absolutely incredible. And if you see this vehicle, it literally looks like the Batmobile.
It does.
Yeah,
it's insane.
I'm just in a place where like everything sounds too good to be true.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. It's a car that can self-heal. So if you get into any scratches or anything, even something small like getting a scratch on your paint job, no longer an issue.
Exactly.
It becomes like a weird car scab.
Yeah.
That will heal itself and it will be fine.
I wonder if it does have a little plaster that appears as it's healing and then
right?
just disappears when it's finished, just falls off.
That would be very fascinating to see how exactly that would look and how that would function. And then to also add on the fact that it's an electric car and will be good for the environment and also will charge faster than a normal electric car.
Right.
It's like, where's the catch here? There has to be a catch.
The catch is it's a Lamborghini and will probably cost you a kidney, an arm, and one eye.
Lamborghini.
It's a bit of a catch, that one. But the pre-sales of this, ironically, have already shot through the roof because people are like, well, this is like a dream car almost, you know? It's just ridiculous. When I was growing up, I don't know if you guys remember this, there was a TV show called Knight Rider.
Yes.
Of course. So Knight Rider was that car that you always wanted. It was super intelligent. It had a bunch of buttons inside that you could just play around with. This is like my version of Knight Rider, something completely unobtainable, but I'll watch it go around in circles.
Mm. The best part of it is that, you know, now, especially with stuff like Alexa and Siri and stuff, you just can have your own version of Jarvis in the car. You can just become Batman. Batman is now a thing that can be a real thing.
We just need the money, Chris.
Yeah. I'm looking at this, that it releases compound composed of nanotubes and it fills in cracks. Yeah. So if you get a scratch on your car, that's where it goes. I'm wondering if it self-heals inside, or is it just like surface?
I don't know. We'd have to ask the guys over at Lamborghini.
Yeah, I mean, I also have another question in terms of, you know, where is the extra material coming from? Let's say like a big chunk gets kind of knocked out of the car or something. How does it grow its own material with the nanotubes? Surely the nanotubes are gone because the part of the car is also gone.
Right. But I'm thinking, like you say earlier on, I'm guessing it's more for like if somebody... Let's say you're driving around Rome or somewhere like that, and somebody comes by on a Vespa and gives you that big scrape down the side of your brand new Lamborghini. I'm guessing that's where it might have been, instead of a chunk falling off, which would be great. You know, but these are not Autobots.
This isn't self-healing to the point where it can like spontaneously regenerate itself.
Like just smash it into two, then you have two cars.
But it can protect against the dangers of car keys.
They'd have to name it something scratches. Like Tetsuo Salamander or something.
Oh,
you know,
it's so gonna happen.
Grow an extra limb.
Next.
Yeah. Right. Moving on. Next story is about AI and how Citigroup have jumped on this bandwagon. It's something from the Business Insider Intelligence.
Yeah.
Dealing with fintech briefing and all that kind of stuff. What have you got, Majida?
Yeah. So Citigroup has led a $20 million round into its London-based behavioral analytics software fintech called Behavox. It brings Behavox valuation to $200 million, and another venture capital firm, Index Ventures, also participated in the round. But what's interesting about this is that Citigroup will now Behavox said that Citigroup will now deploy the startup's technology. Citigroup did not confirm this, but Erkin Adilov, the co-founder of Behavox, told Financial Times that Citigroup was planning to use the technology in a bid to improve customer relations.
Okay, so what is this technology?
So what Behavox does is that it uses natural language processing, NLP, not to be mistaken with neuro-linguistic programming, NLP as well, but this is natural language processing, to improve employees' in customer interactions and boost revenue. It does this by converting audio conversations that it records into text, and then it applies the sentiment analysis algorithms to detect whether the conversation it has jokes or negative or positive interactions, or if it's jokes or if it's angry, and it turns it all essentially into big data. So it takes it listens to customer conversation, it transcribes it, and then it categorizes it into what kind of data it produces.
Right.
But at the same time, what's more interesting is that this software is also detecting or listening to the most discussed topics every day in the market itself. There's 10 topics that it will listen to, and it's within the market itself, and it determines whether or not the market is bearish or bullish at that point in time. The results can then be used to deduce whether a sales employee or traders are buying or selling stocks at the moment. So it's about timing and whether or not they are trading at any point at any given time.
Hang on a minute. Right, so you've got this piece of software that listens to what everybody is talking about.
Yeah.
It then converts that into text,
yeah,
puts it into categories, and then uses some kind of other algorithm to determine whether a market is bullish or bearish, and then can offer advice on that?
It's listening to it on two points. On one side, it's the customer service thing. So it's listening to how the customer responds and things like that. So
why are my shares falling?
And on the other side, it's listening to the market as a whole. So it's not just customers, but it's listening to everyone and what is everyone talking about at the moment. Mm. And then it determines from there. This helps the bank detect whether or not the patterns and trends are, what are the patterns and what are the trends, whether or not they should do something about it, whether they should sit back. It gives the bank an edge. Before something happens, it can predict the trend is moving in this direction, and it can already strategize and take actions to do something about the trend.
I mean, I was speaking to somebody not too long ago about robo-investing.
Mm.
And the reason they said that they wouldn't put an awful lot of faith in that is it's okay to look at algorithms and see how the market is moving and whatnot, but robo-investing doesn't allow you you to listen out for the whispers that happen by the cooler, the water cooler. Mm. This, though,
this one could.
Sounds as though it's doing exactly that.
And because it's gone to the stage where it's actually able to separate whether something is being said as a jest, it's just a joke, or somebody's just angry and then yelling out things, it can separate and differentiate that and get rid of all the emotion filters and just churn out data trends. And that makes it interesting.
This is kind of like replacing, you know, sometimes when you have a call with a customer service person, it'll say, hey, this call may be recorded, blah, blah, blah. And then it'll ask you to rate your thing. You'll never have to do that again because the Behavox will rate it for you in a way. it will figure out for itself how good your experience was with the company. And I'm in a place where, I don't know, I think we've all had a moment in our lives where we've been frustrated with some sort of customer service issue.
Yes.
Especially when dealing with financial stuff. I know I have. And I don't know about this because on the one hand, I think the technology is so interesting and can do so much. The fact that this one software or this one algorithm or this natural language processing software can do so much in presumably such little time and to be able to predict all these things. But also I'm terrified. As with any kind of thing that can listen and understand that isn't a human, I guess.
Mm. They're not the first ones, though. NASDAQ and USB are already adopting behavioral analytics in fintech. But there's a lot of pushbacks, though. I can imagine the whole argument about people actually losing jobs or being replaced by AI already in this.
Yeah, but we've had this discussion before. Yeah. You know, that's inevitable. You know, people have to reskill and move on and do something else. I mean, we can't sit around and say, you know, your job's going to be safe forever, because they're not. Our jobs even are not going to be safe forever.
No.
You know, there's going to be people, not even people, sat here. There's going to be a little box sounding like me and sounding like Christine and sounding like you.
I see a crack in the can of worms already now.
Right. You just need some of those nanotubes to fill it. Right. Time for a short break. We've got some music coming up. It is Jack White with Three Women. When we come back, we're talking about how there's an app. It's a makeup removing app. They're calling it the anti-selfie app.
We'll talk about it more later.
Can't wait. Here we go. A little bit of Jack White, Three Women on BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Moving on to our third story of the day, a makeup removing app that Christine wants to talk about. Yeah. I saw you getting quite fierce with this story when you were reading it. You're battering on your keyboard a little bit earlier on.
I did a lot of kind of, I went on Google and did that thing where you basically read every single news article you can about the thing because you can't believe the thing even exists.
Right.
So it's called Make App, which is, to be fair, quite a cool name.
Yep.
But it's an app that basically, it's like any other kind of beauty editing app. It's kind of similar to Facetune or Camera 360 or whatever other beauty apps. And it adds different effects to your selfies to make it look as if you're wearing different styles of makeup. All sounds, you know, pretty innocent so far. Except that the kind of claim to fame for makeup is that it has a feature that, quote unquote, removes your makeup. It attempts to digitally strip away your makeup and turn your selfies into something a lot less flattering.
Okay.
Now, it's one of those things where there are several issues with this app. First of all, the makeup-free look, the way that the AI kind of removes the makeup doesn't actually do anything that looks like what you would look like without any makeup on. All it does is it makes your skin puffier and blotchier or redder, and it creates wrinkles that like don't actually exist. It's almost like there was like an old filter on app or Tune or whatever that you know, and it's kind of similar to that where it doesn't actually do a good job of what it's supposed to do in the first place. So that's the first thing. I have not, because you have to pay for it.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
It is 99 cents on the App Store. You can technically edit 5 photos for free, but I don't particularly feel like paying a dollar.
Okay, okay.
For the app. But,
and your issue with this app then is what?
Okay, so first of all, that the AI doesn't even work well in the first place, to be honest. But secondly, it's not even the technology that's really the issue. The filters work okay and they change your face the way that they're supposed to, et cetera, et cetera. It's more the concept of the fact that this even exists in the first place. I mean, granted, yes, the makeup-free version is just another filter, but I mean, the same kind of AI has been used for very problematic filters as well, like FaceApp had ethnicity features where it allowed users to alter their selfies with filters like black or Indian or Asian, which is just
right
in and of itself. The fact that you can assume that someone is going to look a specific way with or without makeup, it doesn't, you know, that concept to me it's already quite problematic. Then the whole point is like, why would anyone want to pay a dollar to see someone without makeup in the first place?
Because maybe they have a match on Tinder and they want to know what the woman allegedly looks like without makeup.
I don't think they play it on themselves. They play it on somebody
else. But that's exactly the thing, right? Why is it necessary for you to have to reveal the person behind the... And it's always a woman, isn't it? The branding is all based on women. Let's be real here. You know, there isn't an app that's trying to remove beards from men, for example.
Right.
Let's just put it that way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you know, the way that it kind of makes you look as well, it perpetuates this idea that underneath the layers of like concealer or highlighter or mascara, it's not even that you're reverting to your natural self. You're just ugly. It just makes you look awful, right? And this kind of concept, you know, in today's inclusive feel-good brand market, you know, preying on a woman's insecurity to sell her beauty app that makes her look worse doesn't make any sense and is a bad business move. And so I'm in a place where I think I've talked a lot about cosmetics and makeup on BizBytes before as well, because it's something I'm very passionate about, and it's something that I wear makeup not necessarily just to improve what I look like or anything. It's a routine, and it makes me feel creative. It allows me to express myself. I have a thing where I will wear a color that matches my outfit every day. And it's, you know, I don't see why it was necessary for this guy to come up with this app, because it was a guy, let's be clear, to come up with this app that removes an illusion that like no one cares about in the first place.
I mean, when he developed this app, do you think he went with the full intention of do you think he would look at the ramifications of how it would be looked at?
No.
I mean, because he's probably looked at stuff like, you say, you know, Perfect 365, which makes everybody look beautiful, you know, flawless skin, no dark circles, all of that kind of stuff. You know, in his head, was he just thinking, well, you know what, maybe we'll do the opposite of that, and perhaps didn't expect this kind of fallout that he's getting?
He definitely didn't expect the fallout, because the app's creator, Ashot Gabriel Yanov, acknowledged that, okay, while the blotchy skin effects users have experienced is not great, it's something they're hoping to fix, but he's been very clear about how the fact that the app was not intended to be a misogynistic product, and it's not even their core product. And I quote, "It was really just an experiment of some of the technologies our augmented reality company has been working on, and it was meant to be a fun, entertaining tool."
Right.
But my point is that he would never have realized regardless. You know, this is something that is integrally something that is wrong with the way that beauty standards are upheld in today's society, and the amount of pressure, you know, that is not only put on women to look beautiful, but like naturally beautiful. You know, there are tons of videos on YouTube of no makeup makeup looks, and they have like 37 products in them, and you're supposed to be the best version of yourself, but to pretend as if that work doesn't go into it, or even if you do wear like bright colors or something, that's apparently like a lie or a deception, and it's not. It's just like, sorry, we want to put colors on our faces. What's so wrong with
it's
that?
It's face paint.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You're doing it to express yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's the reason why I wanted to talk about it is because it doesn't make any sense as a concept, as an app, as a business idea, even of itself. Like the only thing that I can think of is that it's controversial enough that people are buying it to try it out.
Right.
Right.
Vegeta, what's your thoughts?
Aside from the fact that I think it would be great for Halloween that just passed, I think that would be an interesting way to use this, because I've been thinking about how would someone use this concept, this app. If you take a step back, I think, and if you look at this not as an app for practical use, it is an interesting way of somebody making a statement. I'm trying to see whether he has a point here. Making a statement on if women are using too much makeup today, and if we can remove all the makeup from women, these are the flaws underneath them. And he's trying to... He did a poor job, but he's categorically saying that if women don't wear makeup, they would be shadowy-eyed, they would be tired-looking, they would have dry skin, wrinkles, and all over.
Yeah, but we already know that. You know, I mean, it's not like this guy has to like reinforce that issue, is it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody gets tired, everybody gets wrinkles, everybody gets dark circles, you know. But like Christine was saying, the perpetuation of that myth, you know, is, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, and I don't think that this guy should. I don't like the idea of stuff like Perfect 365 and all of these kind of stuff that make people look flawless. And in the same regard, I don't really like an app that's removing all of that, because if somebody's made an effort to make themselves look pretty, and if it's making them feel good about it, you know, for some guys to then download an app and just strip that away,
yeah,
and then post that image and say, look, this is what she really looks like, even though we know it's not.
It's not even real, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not even an accurate representation. Right. So many people have posted before and after photos of their face with makeup, and then what the app thinks that they look like without makeup, and it doesn't work.
Yeah. Right. It's two ends of that spectrum. One side is to beautify a person. The other one is to uglify a person.
Yeah.
Both of them, I think, it doesn't sit well with me in both ends of this.
Mm.
There shouldn't
to beautify or to uglify. It shouldn't just...
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I'm kind of in a place where it's up to you what you decide to do with your appearance. And it shouldn't be in anyone's responsibility but yours to decide what you want to do with that. If you want to see yourself without makeup, but like in an app and not just remove your makeup, I don't know, go for it, right? But I'm just in a place where, the technology doesn't even work right. And it just feels like you're revealing something that doesn't need to be revealed.
Okay, playing devil's advocate then. Couldn't it just be seen as a bit of fun?
Yeah, go for it. That's the thing.
Right.
Like, if you want to do that, fine. But it's just, I personally am kind of in a place where it perpetuates so many issues that are wrong with the way that we understand beauty as a concept.
Mm.
And also as a commodity, you know, because like it just, to me, whether or not it's fun for you or to just see like, oh, the celebrity has a lot of makeup on, whatever, but there's no point to it. Mm. And fine if that is enough for you to download the app and pay a dollar to do this. But why keep feeding into that cycle?
All right.
So what I was going to get to just now was that it's not a functional app. It's not an app that we will use, let's just remove everybody's makeup. But the point I think it's trying to make is this, that if people can get defensive over that, oh, I've used some, people have used, I like using makeup, and it makes me feel good, and things like that. The other end of the spectrum would be, hey, you're using too much makeup, and that's not necessarily a great thing. Both sides have their valid argument.
All right. Let us know what you think. Get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio. As Rambling Mind has said, he's actually tweeted and said, geez, what a rant. I thought maybe you might want to combat that a little bit later on, Christine. Time for some music. It is The Clash with Clampdown here on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury with
Majida Hashim
and Christine Wong.
Moving on to story number four, how the US decides which security flaws to keep secret. Tell me about this. Where did you pick this story up from?
I picked this story up from CNET.
Okay.
So this story came out just a couple of hours ago. So the question is, when the US government discovers a new security flaw and it faces the important question of to reveal it or not, what are the procedures they go through?
You mean, imagine if something like a huge data breach and everybody's mobile phone numbers were stored somewhere and being sold
so
somewhere.
What were the procedures?
What would you do?
Just in theory, because clearly that's not a thing that's happened.
No.
So this is what the US would do, okay?
Okay.
So the White House released a Vulnerabilities Equities Policy, VEP, this week, and they detailed the process that it goes through in this, where the decision-making is concerned, with 10 agencies, including the CIA, NSA and Homeland Security, and explains why some vulnerabilities are kept secret while some are immediately issued warning for others. The decisions are specifically regarding zero-day vulnerabilities. Zero-day refers to a hole in the software that is unknown to the vendor, and this security hole is then exploited by hackers before vendors realizes it to fix it.
Right.
This is where you can be infiltrated with malware, spyware, and all these other things. And government agencies often find these vulnerabilities and they turn it into their own hacking tools instead of telling everyone else. After the WannaCry ransomware spread last year as a stolen NSA hacking tool, Microsoft's chief counsel criticized the government for keeping the vulnerabilities a secret from companies that can actually patch them up, and so many people were affected by it. According to White House Cybersecurity Coordinator Rob Joyce, he said this week that it is critical to improve transparency on how this process works. But at the same time, he defended the government's decision to keep some vulnerabilities a secret. The process goes this way. When the process, when they find out something that's vulnerable, they submit it to the VEP review board. And as I mentioned just now, it involves the NSA, the Department of Defense, the CIA, Homeland Security, and about a few other, they altogether 10 agencies on the board.
So it goes through 10 agencies before they decide whether or not they're going to release the information?
Not yet. They go through 10 agencies. And then after that, these 10 agencies will discuss together whether or not, how much of a threat it is, how widespread this product can be, how easily is it that this vulnerability be taken advantage of, how much damage it will cause, and actually how much it will be, how easily would it be to be fixed. And then after that, they consider if the government can use this vulnerability for its own purposes first. And then the third and fourth step would be they consider if we tell people about this, that we know about this vulnerability, how much in trouble are we going to get that we are telling people. So consider that for a while, that they are going to consider that I'm going to use this and I can infiltrate my enemies and listen and hack into their systems and their cybersecurity.
I mean, we talk about red tape and jumping through hoops here.
Yeah.
How long does this kind of process take then?
So this process takes, the review itself is 5 days.
Right.
If it is a really bad attack and everybody knows about it, it could be sped up, but the review itself, 5 days. This is when they discuss, can we use it, we shouldn't use it, or should we tell people? And then if they decide we're going to disclose it, it is done within 7 days. This is on top of the 5 days. So five to about 2 weeks before people know about it. But if they decide that they're going to keep it a secret, it will be reviewed annually. It will be a year from now whether they will come back and then decide, should we tell people now? Or should we not tell people now? The group can change its mind, and this will depend whether or not the 0 day becomes public knowledge. Mm. If everybody knows about it, then they may confess that, yeah, we knew it all along. Mm. But if people don't know, we might keep it for as long as we can because we might be able to use it ourselves.
You see, this is the kind of thing that, you know, when people say, have faith in your government, this kind of makes me go, yeah, well, I'm not so sure about it.
See, this is where I will play devil's advocate here a little bit, just to ask, you know, I think it's really easy, especially now in this kind of time of a lot of volatility and a lot of stuff happening where for example, if a problem happens and it's something that you can fix by yourself, do you feel like telling everyone else about it when you know that everyone else is going to panic?
Okay.
That's kind of where I'm just trying to kind of understand why they might want to, like, not like kind of excusing the idea that they can use the vulnerability against these people or whatever, but, you know, is it worth causing that much panic and that much stuff if it is a problem that they can fix and then also then turn to their advantage is my question here.
Okay, I'll give you an example. Let's imagine for a second that there's an election coming up in the US and there's the chance for England to move out of the European Union. Mm. And you find out that a bunch of alleged Russian operatives have taken over bits of Facebook and they've taken over bits of Twitter. Whose national interest is it then to reveal that that is actually happening?
Mm.
You know, do you sit back and do nothing about it and hope that companies like Facebook and Twitter will take ownership of that and deal with it? Or do you actually announce to the public, like, look, this is happening and we need to deal with this now? I mean,
yeah.
Something like that would you know,
yeah,
definitely get me kind of going, yeah, we need to deal with this now.
Yeah. So,
right?
I mean, the way they use it for what the ransomware and the spyware, it's more of the case of if I can use these tools and I'm going to hack into Russia, I'm going to hack into North Korea, and I will be able to use this because I can infiltrate. I found a hole now. I can infiltrate into their software. I can listen to all their defense. I can listen to all their financial transactions and things like that. Should I use that and not tell everybody else that, by the way, everyone else's computers, not just the Russians or not just the North Koreans, are vulnerable at the same time. But because it's so useful to me, and I don't want somebody like Microsoft or the vendor that created that software to come out with a patch and patch it up.
Right.
So therefore, I'm not going to tell anyone and let everybody else be exposed because it's advantageous for me to listen to someone else as long as it's not.
That's very much post-Cold War thinking, though, isn't it? Right? I mean, during the Cold War, you would hope that your government knew about these these secrets and were using them and were taking advantage of them. Nowadays, because we are all sharing absolutely everything, you know, whether or not we want to or not, we are the ones that are saying, you know, hang on, well, maybe you are sharing a little bit too much. Maybe you do have a bit too much power, and we have to hold somebody accountable for that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah, and now because you have things like data breaches happening
in, alleged data breaches in more places than one,
Could somebody be using this data, or could somebody be using this data all this while, which is why the reaction to it was so slow. And at the same time, people are losing their privacy information. They're losing money for this. They are getting caught in all kinds of credit card scams. These could be collateral damage considered that because of slow reaction, because you don't tell these companies to fix their problems.
Yeah. Right. Okay, we have to move on. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about an algorithm that can tell what you've learned before going to sleep. Something happy to end on. Some music coming up. It is U2 with Beautiful Day here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up for the day, but we do have one more story. It's about an algorithm, apparently, that can tell what you've learned before you go to sleep.
Yes.
Can we use this to cheat in exams? Not that I suggest you do that. I'm just, you know.
That's an idea.
Asking for a friend.
Not yet. Oh. Let's put it that way. Okay, so, I mean, first of all, we experience a lot of stuff every day, so it's no surprise that we need a little bit of time away from the sensory overload of daily life to process everything and save the important bits. Mm-hmm. And we usually do that when we sleep. A mounting body of research actually characterizes sleep as an active brain state for consolidating memories.
Huh.
While we sleep, our brains appear to engage in a memory consolidation process that involves reactivating the same neurons that were fired when the experience first happened. What is less certain, however, is whether individual memories leave distinct traces in our neural activity as they are consolidated. Or in other words, an algorithm has come up that is able to effectively read electrical activity from sleeping brains and determine what they were memorizing as a result.
Oh, okay. How did this happen?
Okay, so let's just clarify that before we get carried away, it doesn't mean that a computer can tell what you're dreaming or determine the content of what is being memorized outside a controlled clinical environment, but it is the first baby step in that direction.
Right, okay.
So the experiment itself what happened was 32 subjects studied photos of either a person or a house shortly before falling asleep. On one night, the subjects were exposed to a set of 100 photos of houses 30 times. And on the second night, the same subjects studied 100 photos of faces. The subjects were then hooked up to an electroencephalogram, a device that measures electrical activity in the brain, then spent a full night sleeping in the laboratory. Now, the experiment is meant to determine whether the electrical activity in the brain contains signatures unique to previously learned information. In other news, the brain essentially could tell the difference between when they were dreaming about a house or when they were dreaming about a face.
Oh, wow.
So it's one of those things where a lot of research has shown that humans retain information better when they go to sleep after learning relative to stay awake. So it seems plausible that if memory consolidation leaves content-specific traces during sleep, they'd be strongest when the content is absorbed directly before sleep. So this could help with a lot of like memorization of things.
Right.
Not exactly cheating on exams, but learning, but knowing a little bit more about how we learn even when we're totally unconscious.
We can hack the brain a little bit.
So it's like if I want to remember something, I read it and over again, and then I go to sleep.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Right before you sleep.
But you see, for the longest time, we were told that when you go to sleep, your brain, well, I mean, it's active, but it doesn't actively learn stuff whilst you're sleeping.
Well,
but this is telling us opposite then, I suppose.
It definitely does. The algorithms are only able to tell whether a subject has studied a house or a face, but not which particular house or face they had studied. But this is actually the first time this phenomenon has been demonstrated in humans.
This is fascinating. Mm. All right, I hope to hear more about this. We have to leave you, though, folks. We're almost done. We've got 1 minute left, and we've got to quickly wrap up. We've got some music coming up from Madness in just a couple of minutes. But before we do that, we'll quickly run through what we covered today. We started off how Lamborghini have created the first ever self healing sports car.
And then we spoke about how Citibank has jumped onto the AI bandwagon with Behavox.
And then I talked about Makeup, an app that wants to remove your makeup.
And then we spoke about the process that the US goes through in order to see whether or not they want to tell you their security flaws.
And then I wrapped it up with an algorithm that can tell what you've learned before going to sleep.
Love the idea of that. Okay, don't go anywhere though, folks, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news is, of course, the Breakfast Grill replay. Now, the Finnish education system is often praised as one of the world's best, yet in recent years, some Asian economies may have surpassed Finland in global education rankings. Olli-Pekka Heinonen, a former education minister and current director general of the Finnish National Agency for Education, spoke to the Breakfast Grill and explains the unique Finnish formula for making sound education policy. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. I'm Richard Bradbury. On behalf of Majida Hashim and Christian Wong, this has been Enterprise BizBytes. The guys will be back same time tomorrow at noon here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.